The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family. Jaran, Jaran, Jaran,
Jaran. It is My Mate Bought a Toaster. Welcome along. Here we go again. Now, this week, I'm very excited because for the first time, I've spread my wings away from stand-ups and actors and basically all the people I know in my comedy world. And I thought it was about time we started to get some people on from other walks of life. And I'm very, very pleased to welcome a fabulous author and also a former dating columnist, we'll get onto that, the very wonderful Laura Jane Williams. Hello, Laura Jane Williams. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. And also thank you for putting the fear of God in me that everybody before me has been a comedian. And then here I am. Like, have I got to be funny?
No.
Have I got to, you know.
Absolutely no pressure there. To be honest, most comedians, as regular listeners to this show will know, it usually involves going into a lot of self-help books for the comedians. So we're probably going to find someone who's really well-balanced and happy in you, which will be very inspiring.
I mean, fingers crossed.
Right, now what we're going to do, we're going to dive into your past, okay? Here we go. So, going... We've never done that before. Why don't we do a rewind sound effect here?
You need a soundboard.
You need a soundboard. 2010, you were on Amazon, right? 10 years ago, but nothing. You didn't place any orders. So you obviously joined Amazon in a sort of browsy, rubbernecky kind of way. Again, 2011, nothing bought. Okay, don't know what's going on here. Where are you at this point, by the way, 2010, please?
2010. Do you know what? I went to university late.
Okay.
So I, September through June, I would be in Derby. And then I would spend all summers on the Riviera in Italy teaching English.
Oh, that's dreamy.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Dreamy. So hang on, so you were in Derby because you hadn't been to uni yet? That's where you're from?
We moved all over. My parents relocated to Derbyshire, and then I decided that's where I was going to go to university because I wanted to be near them.
No, oh my God, you like your parents. See, straight away, you're definitely not a stand-up comic. Straight off the bat. So tell me about going to university late. Why did that happen?
Well, do you know what? I think the education system's flawed, Tom. I think it's ridiculous that you'd have a 14-year-old choose 10 subjects to study, and from those 10 subjects, when they're 16, they choose 4 subjects, and then they drop one to take exams in 3, and then we say, now pick a degree that may or may not determine the rest of your life.
Yes, I see.
And I am I'm my father's daughter, and I'm also my mother's daughter. My father is anti-authority, my mother is a black sheep. And I just said, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And so everybody thought I was throwing my life away. I was a clever enough girl and sort of saying, actually, everything everybody else stands for is ridiculous to me. I shall go and travel.
So how long did you travel for?
On and off for 4 years.
Wow, that's full on dropoutery, that is.
it's proper, you know, neighbours putting their hands on my mother's shoulder to say, I'm so sorry. But do you know what? Credit to my parents. My dad marched me down to H&M Samuel and got me a little, he was the patron saint of travel, St. Christopher. Got me a little pendant with a St. Christopher on and sort of went, there you go, off you go.
That is very nice, but I would have got you that and a knife. You know what I mean? Just to cover all the bases.
Yes. I understand. And, you know, I don't want to give a false impression. Yes, I went off, I travelled, I was very young. But there's not a single place I went where I didn't have a week of homesickness before I could settle in.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually that taught me so much about resilience, about feeling the fear and doing it anyway, about sometimes stretching your comfort zone is not comfortable.
Yeah. What was your lowest point when you were traveling then? What was the bit when you were like, actually, I really need to get home now? Was there a dark moment when you were doing that?
I will say, there was a moment in a Cambodian guest house where I had eaten something and just thank, all I will say is this. Thank goodness it was basically a tiled washroom. with the swat and drop because there was lots happening in every direction.
It's very hard to pebble dash a wipe clean situation. That is a challenge we can all take on. Oh my goodness. As low points go, a Cambodian guest house has got to be right up there. So you travel for 4 years before you went to uni. Now, have you got siblings? Have you got brothers and sisters? Were you an only child?
I've got a brother who is younger in age and much older and wiser in temperament.
I see. So your parents were like, she can go travelling because we've got a spare one anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah, I think that was it. I remember calling home. I was calling home from Vietnam, and I remember my brother saying on the phone, so what, are you going to like come back and get rid of the TV and say just because you've been to Vietnam, you're happy like looking at the stars? And it was like, ow, bang, bang. I mean, I was gonna, but...
Well, look, that chimes quite nicely with what we're looking at straight up here. Although, actually, this was bought for Jack Williams.
So that's my brother.
So here we go. Look, the 10th of July, 2012, Where the Heart Beats, John Cage, Zen Buddhism and the Inner Life of Artists. This is you telling your brother to bin off the TV.
I mean, I would have been in Italy that summer, so I wouldn't have been with him for his birthday. And that book is my brother to a T. That book is
more.
My brother to a T. He is just... Do you know what? I don't often talk about my brother. He's the most remarkable human. I've long said I'm a bit of a, you know, an all singing, all dancing older sister, and I think that must be quite difficult.
Yeah.
You know, if there's limelight, I want it all. Or historically did, you know, growing up.
I thought
to be seen was to be liked. I got a lot of things confused. I thought attention was validation, and it's not. But I've only learned that in the past 20 minutes.
See, that's weird, because normally it goes the other way. Normally, it's the younger sibling, i.e. moi, who is the attention-seeking, irritating, wanting all the limelight. So that's what I'm saying to you is you're weird.
Thank you. I received that. Everything in my family is backwards. So you are right. It is normally the younger one, isn't it? But so I would sort of da 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 jazz hands, and Jack has just got this incredibly self-assured. I'm a fan of people that have done the work, that have done the deep digging, and he's just got this self-assured. You know, I go to take a breath, and that's when he says something that just shatters everything you knew about the world and life, and everybody turns to look at him and says...
Sounds like a guru. Ah,
he is a bit of a guru. He is a bit of a guru.
So what does he do that with his life then? What's he end up... He's got a novelist for a sister.
He does. Do you know what? He works in post-production for advertising out in Chicago.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
Very nice.
Where he lives with his husband. And, so, you know, there'll be an advert for Google. There'll be an advert for Lynx. There'll be an advert for Samsung. And,
those lovely companies. All the good guys.
All the good guys. and Jack helped make them, which
nice.
Is pretty incredible.
Nice. From Derby to Chicago. To be honest, I think he might be a better interview, really, Laura, because, I mean, he's out in Chicago. I mean, listen, thanks so much. If you could give me his number. So this book, right, Where the Heart Beats, John Cage, Zen Buddhism and the Inner Life of Artists. Can you give us an upsum of it? In fact, a heroic and fascinating biography of John Cage, showing how his work and that of countless American artists was transformed by Zen Buddhism. So does this float your boat?
I mean, I fell asleep after you said John, to be honest.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Not enough murders. I need some suspense for this one.
Yeah. Is John Cage an artist, a performance artist, a musician?
Off the top of my head, and I'm definitely not Googling, hang on. I think, off the top of my head, he's an American composer who did 4 Minutes 33, the famous song that is Complete Silence.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time there might have been an exhibition at the Barbican, and I think my brother had mentioned going or seeing it or wanting to see it. So I looked into, there's a thing he will like. Away we go. But my brother, I mean, he's been on 10-day silent retreats before now. Like, that's how he spent his new year
Okay, well, he's not a good interview for the podcast then. That would be very weird.
Yeah, takes it beyond the 4 minutes 22 into
Oh wow, okay. And he's always been like this, has he? So do you think he's always been a silent one? Because, you know, you're like, as you were saying, sucking up all the attention.
Yeah, and definitely, I mean, you do learn more by listening than by talking, don't you? And I think my brother is absolutely the epitome of that. He's the poster child for how you learn more by staying quiet.
This is great. You've been so nice about your family so early on in this podcast. This is absolutely brilliant. What about this 19th of December? This might be a Christmas present as well. The Three Marriages, Reimagining Work, Self and Relationship. These are fascinating books you're buying here.
Do you know what? That was me.
Right, come on then.
Is that David White?
Yes, please.
Excellent. Yes, that was me. Was that at the end of 2012?
Yes.
So I had graduated university the year before. Mm-hmm. I with a first class degree, thanking you.
Ka-ching. Yeah, but from Derby, so.
Oh, don't, I've got the biggest chip on my shoulder. Like one day I'm going to go and get a master's.
Oh, come on.
From a red brick, just so that I know I can. And actually, I've currently got a career coach, and what we talk about is how I've got a little bit of a limiting belief that I'll only go for things that I know I could get. So actually really accessed something there that, yeah, I went to Derby because I knew they'd take me, but I was worried that like Warwick wouldn't.
Oh my God, guess where I went?
Did you go to Warwick?
I absolutely went to Warwick.
What did you study?
I studied How to Lose Your Mind and Your Soul over 3 years. That's mm-hmm. what I studied. Mm-hmm. I studied how to find the best car park near the theatre so I could spend my whole time doing drama when I was doing an English degree.
Yeah, excellent.
I studied how to hang around with lots of equally privileged white middle class children who were, you know, very much not stretching themselves, kind of like what you just said, maybe. And I regret going there. I wish I'd gone, you know, but I was a small town boy, so I just went and did what I went. Even went where my brother had gone. He went to Warwick, so I just sort of followed him. That pathetic.
Interesting.
But Derby is a great uni, actually. I know got a lot of mates who went to Derby and is a good university. But the thing that's really flagged for me there is that you've got a career coach. Come on, please. More.
Do you know what? I call this conversation GPSing, where you can ask me something and I'll take you the scenic route. We could have spent 10 minutes speeding down the M1 to get to this answer, but actually I'm just going to take you on the back roads via, you know, the beaches of Bognor Regis.
Good.
And then we'll get to where we're going.
Come on, let's go to East Anglia. Let's do it.
Yes, it's a recent development, actually, and one. It's interesting that I've just slipped that in there because I've actually not publicly talked about it because I don't know how to yet. But I think I had an awareness of a lot of reactive building in my career, just saying, you know, I'm very lucky to have been offered certain opportunities, and lucky in the sense that I worked very hard to be lucky.
Yes.
But a lot of reactive, just saying yes to the next thing. Yes. And I think I started to entertain the notion of, gosh, if this is what I can build by being reactive and just following the breadcrumbs and saying yes, if I was deliberate about my choices and maybe had a little bit more self-belief, so instead of going for the thing that I knew wouldn't turn me down, risked being turned down, how would that look? How would that feel? And it's just such a strange thing. Being an author, I have an incredible agent. I have my publisher, incredible as well. My editor is, you know, it's just remarkable.
Yeah.
But obviously, everybody is part of the team of cooks at the restaurant.
Good. So love this analogy. Yes.
I needed to go outside of my own restaurant to just have somebody to sound out some stuff.
So is this you thinking of doing non-writing stuff or writing in a different context? What do you mean?
Well, do you know what? I'm only a month in to a 6 month contract with it. So I'll come back to you at Christmas and let you know.
Wow. Okay, good. I'm interested in the whole idea of what happens if you plan and think outside the breadcrumbs, which is what this episode should now be called. Think Outside the Breadcrumbs with Laura Jane Williams. But it's true because as someone who, I've done that a lot in my career. I mean, let's be honest, often because of money. I just go, yeah, there's some money for me to go and do a thing. I'll go and do the thing. Mm. And there's a story about Jimmy Carr, apocryphal story about him turning up with his agent. He had a ring binder, big thick ring binder with a 5-year plan on it. Here's the gigs I will do. Mm. Here's the TV shows I will develop. Here's how I will do this. And he and his agent stuck to that plan, said no to lots of things. And he's done okay.
Hasn't he? And you know what? There is such power. I actually have a tattoo I did a semester abroad from Derby University. I went to the dizzying heights of Detroit for a semester abroad.
How was that?
And do you know what? It was brilliant, really. Yeah. And I have a tattoo on myself that says C, which is Italian for yes. And reminding me to say yes to life. And for a long time, I believed in that. Say yes to the trip, say yes to the opportunity. Mm. And actually, the older I get, the more I recognize the power in saying no.
Mm.
So that ultimately your yes means something. And I was very afraid of that for a very long time. So I think working with a career coach is just helping me step into that next version.
Interesting. Mm. I love it. I love it. God, we're becoming like a sort of self-help podcast today. This is brilliant. So Lauren J. Williams, you bought The Three Marriages, Reimagining Work, Self and Relationship by David White.
I did.
That was back in 2012. And then eventually in 2020, you got yourself a career coach. So it took a while.
But my interest in all of those things, I had bought that book because it was cited by Danielle Laporte. I had been living in London for 6 months at that point and was trying to, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. London and New York, it's the same. And so I got very into Danielle Laporte, who was all about like following your truths, following your core desired feelings. And she cited this David White book. And so I bought it, read a chapter, and then passed it along.
That's what we like to hear. That is a really important thing to hear, because I think listening to you talking about how much you think carefully about your career and what's going on and you have success, and people can hear that and think, oh, now she's bought this clever book about career, she will have read the whole thing. It's very encouraging to know that everybody buys the book with the best intentions, reads a chapter, and then instantly gets distracted and moves on. That is encouraging. We like that.
This is it. This is it. It's important to talk about that. Yes, I read the chapter. Yes, I read the conclusion. I got about the measure of it.
Exactly. Always do the York notes. Okay, let's move on then, shall we? 2013. Now, lots and lots of books, as you would imagine. What have we got? Let's see. Oh, we've got Caitlin Moran, Tina Fey. These are all vital.
You can tell what phase I was going through.
Yeah, The Handmaid's Tale. So this is all 2013. The Firestarter Sessions, which you bought as a gift, because you actually bought that in 2012. This is by Danielle Laporte. Tell us about The Firestarter Sessions.
So The Firestarter Sessions was the book that cited the David White. And The Firestarter Sessions was the first thing that introduced me to this idea that chasing things is futile, because chasing things, once you get them, you're ultimately not going to feel any different. The cleverest thing you can do is identify the feelings that bring you most joy and fill your daily life with the things that honor those feelings. So you could think that what you want is a promotion, but actually what you want is to be able to go to your father to tell him that you're doing well at work so that he will validate you. Yes. So this book then says, so skip going for the promotion because that's futile. How do you develop your relationship with your father? Or how do you get those feelings of validation from something other than work? And that was just so transformational for me. I think that copy was a gift from my auntie.
Maria Perone. I've probably horribly mispronounced that. Perdone.
Oh, did I send it to Maria? Oh, so she was a friend out in Rome. So I will have sent it to Maria. And at a later point, you'll probably see it appear again then for my auntie. Anybody who I get a whiff might be interested, I think. I've got the book.
Have
for
a load
you.
Of that. It's a great idea. That's what you've just said is really, really interesting and very compelling, because it's something I've always been fascinated by. And again, I have to use stand-up comedy because it's the only sort of world that I really know. And I know full well there are comics and entertainers at the top of their game who still will look across the aisle and see that X is doing better and feel miserable.
Yeah.
And that I find really interesting, because it is that compulsion to always to have a thing rather than to feel fulfillment in doing the thing you love doing. And I guess that's that's very interesting for me, because that's what made me start this podcast a year ago, because I thought I just want to do something I love doing without having an aim in sight. I just love doing this, and that's and this is obviously making me a huge amount of money so I can retire now, which is
and what feeling do you embody most when you're doing this, when you once you hang up or you've press published? What feeling is it that you go,
What do I really enjoy? I enjoy laughing at life with people.
So it's that's connection, potentially.
Yeah, definitely connection. Thank you, writer, for putting a better word on that. It is definitely that. Definitely that. I think the best moments are when you have that thing and you find that commonality and you're like, yes, and and that's what you get with stand-up as well, of course, when you wheel out an observation that you think is just you and the whole audience go and laugh with you, you're like, we all have this thing, hooray, we're not alone, hooray, we are falling towards the grave, but we're doing it sort of together. Fuck you. Fuck you, Samuel Beckett.
All of television history is contained within the Box of Delights.
It was happening in front of us.
Incredible.
In our living rooms. It was amazing.
Guests pick their favourite television moment
and tell us why they love it.
And is this the episode where Daisy's just been for the interview at the Woman's Magazine?
Flaps.
That's it, Flaps.
Yeah.
Named one of Radio Times best podcasts of the year.
I don't understand people who don't see the joy in drawing the curtains, mug of hot chocolate and something nice on TV. Like, what could be nicer than that?
Than having a snuggle.
Exactly.
Nostalgia in bite-sized chunks.
Box of Delights
from Great Big Owl.
On the 4th of October 2013, you bought the X-Pro LED head torch adjustable head strap.
Did I?
Yes, what? Come on, you've been going through people's bins at night? Or
was that to me?
Yeah, I love it when people are baffled by what they bought. What? What?
Well, did I send that out to Maria as well? Or?
No, that was for Laura Jane Williams. Writer and dating columnist.
In 2013, you say?
2013, yeah. You bought this is very, very suspicious.
Isn't it? What months?
What, in October, when it's... Now, maybe you go... Sometimes people go running with these things. Are you a runner?
October 2013. I became a runner in 2014.
Well, maybe you were taking a run up to the running. I don't know. I don't know, but it's... I can't. Sorry, I'm sorry. It's there. The facts are there.
Aren't they? They're very confronting facts, and I feel very unsafe right now, Tom.
Good. That's what we like.
I have absolutely no idea why I bought an LED headlamp. I can only imagine.
Well, okay. If you think you know, give us a tweet at ToasterPod. Why did Laura Jane Williams buy a headlamp? Was she writing at night? Maybe you were, it could be quite good if, lying in bed with your partner and they're asleep and you can get the headlamp on and you can read without waking them up. There's all sorts of permutations for this thing, but mainly killer. That's all I can see.
Yeah, killer and bin rifler.
Yeah, bin rifler extraordinaire. All right, well, if you pops into your head why you got it, I mean, what we could do is write a review on the product saying, hi, it's Laura Jane Williams here. Does anyone know why I bought this?
Why I got it. It's going to bother me.
Yeah.
It's
going to bother me.
I'll be seconds away from sleep in about 2 weeks, and suddenly I'll go.
It was that. It was that. Well, will you let me know, and I can update people in future episodes of the podcast.
Yeah, I think
because it will bother people as well. They'll need to know. It's got 3.4 stars out of 5. A really useful and a good fit. That's what R.D. Spencer said. I wouldn't throw it about and expect it to survive, but if you are reasonably careful with it, then it should last well. I must have a small head because it fits me no problem and is reasonably comfortable. Very good for rifling through my neighbour's bins. Oh, there it is! There
Excellent.
You go. He didn't say that. They did not say that. Great headlamp puts the light into the right place. As I've got older, this is from Chris, I have found that when working, I seem to need more light on the work. Can't do much while holding a torch. This unit fits the bill. Fits snug, lights a good area, and the batteries last. Perfect for my kill room. He didn't say that. He didn't say that. That last bit at the end was me. So, right, okay, good. This has raised some suspicions about you. In terms of, you know, you're obviously a novelist because you're sowing the seeds of doubt and worry now. This is good. This is perfect. Let's go into 20...
The narrative arc of the
yes,
podcast.
There
oh,
you
it's
go.
It's Chekhov's gun. I'll leave this here and we shall but revisit it, but
yes!
only in the... Doom- yeah, okay.
Exactly, exactly.
In the conclusion.
Chekhov's gun. All right, Nutribullet. Hello, Nutribullet. September 2015. Oh, look, you bought them not for you, though. You've bought two.
Yes.
For Richard Williams. You've gone crazy for Richard Williams. You bought all sorts for Richard Williams.
I think I was staying at my parents' at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because my mother had had a knee operation.
Uh-huh.
And I had jacked it. Is this at the end? When is this? The end of 2014?
15, September 2015.
So I'd spent from October. Oh God! What? No, I thought the headlamp had come to me then, but it hadn't.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I apologize.
It absolutely will. It absolutely will. And interrupt any thought you're having when it comes to you.
So yes, I had spent from the middle of 2014 till the end of 2015 traveling again. I lasted a year and a half in London before I went, sod this for a game of cricket, I'm off.
What were you doing in London for a year and a half?
I spent 6 months working in SEO.
What's that mean? SEO?
SEO is search engine optimization.
Jesus
so companies
Christ.
That want to come at the top of the search.
Oh.
When you Google headlamps,
yes.
you want a certain brand of headlamp. I worked okay. in a tiny little Shoreditch office, and then I moved into beauty PR. But even when I did that job, I think I negotiated 4 days a week instead of 5 days a week because the office life was not for me.
Mm, no. No.
It really wasn't.
I bet the headlamp really put your colleagues off as well. Cool. She's nice, but she doesn't. She really glares when she looks at you.
That's exactly it. So then I had travelled. I went all over. I taught English in Russia. I went out to Bali. I spent some time in Malaysia.
Tell me about that moment when you think, oh, suck this off. Bye-bye. Like, what is that? What is the moment where it occurs to you? Is it an itching sensation? Is it like a, you just know you've got to do it? Because I'm not a traveller and I've never been into it. I'm too late. I can't be asked. Tell me what that moment is like when you're like, right, Russia, let's do this.
Do you know what? I've got a really low threshold for dissatisfaction in my own life, which I think actually, thank you for therapizing me in this moment, I think feeds into, so I'll just go with the next easy yes.
I see.
So sitting with discomfort and planning a little bit and going for something that might not be a yes.
Yes.
I'm learning to go against my instincts a little bit. But, you know, I was late 20s at this point. The bit that I missed out the story about working in beauty PR 4 days a week is that I was fired.
Okay, right. That will help. Yeah, that will help. Now, why were you fired? Was it an awkward moment?
They could tell I wasn't interested, Tom. They knew. And do you know what? I had a very poor boss. And I've since learned that people don't leave jobs. People leave bosses.
Oh, good.
And I've had
great wisdom.
Isn't it? I've
yes.
had very few good bosses in my life. It baffles me. That employment culture basically means that you do a job for a certain amount of time and then they put you in charge of other people doing that job.
Yeah.
When actually being a leader is independent of your ability to do that job. So the woman running this company, I don't care how long she'd been doing it, she was not a very good leader. And again, something that I'm trying, I've just never been very good, even when I am trying. At hiding how I feel about people.
Yes, I can't do that either. I can't do that either, which is making this podcast very difficult. But yes, I know that feeling. And you're like, I'm going to have to tell them.
Even when I'm trying to be neutral, by definition of my being neutral, because I am a friendly person, it speaks volumes. So I don't even have to be outwardly hostile. I just have to not be effusive. And that sends alarm bells ringing, I think. So, I didn't want to be there. They tried to transfer me to the Essex office, knowing that that would be an hour and a half commute each way.
I see.
Which was basically like, oh, you can either do that or you can leave. No,
ironic
full
that
well.
you went traveling then instead. You didn't want the journey, so you went traveling.
But it was on my own terms. Coming back to that anti-authoritarian father and that black sheep mother and the Zen Buddhist brother. I said, I'm just going to set my own terms. So, yeah, I went out to Italy again, did some teaching there, got a message from a friend who I'd met through teaching, who was working at a university in England. And she said, can you just come and do 2 weeks for me? I need somebody. And when I was there, I met a Russian lady called Olga.
Sure.
And Olga didn't so much ask if I wanted to come out and teach at her language school for the rest of the year, so much as told me.
That's what we like, being told to do something. That's
and
it, you're
so
in.
So again, an easy yes. I just said, oh, all right then. And it was a phenomenal amount of money.
Right.
She did. She was very generous with some of the cash in hand stuff as well.
Oh, I see. HMRC, if you're listening. Yeah. Good.
So I did all right then, and I was due to go on a trip to Malaysia anyway, and just decided to leave earlier and sort of save my ticket and cancel my ticket home, basically.
Mm.
So, did 2 months in Russia and came back and then set off, went to Bali, Malaysia, Thailand.
Off she goes again. Amazing.
Trained to be a yoga teacher. And then by the time I got back, had gotten my agent and was working on selling my first book.
Now, listen, so you must have been writing this book during the traveling then?
I was. Brace yourself. I'm going to use a little bit of terminology. I'm not proud of myself for this.
Okay, as long as you explain it afterwards. Yeah, go for it.
I was a digital nomad. I know. God.
Sorry, 1 second.
I know.
Oh, God, I came right out there. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. So,
a glass of water.
I need to take the taste away.
Yeah. Oh. I was a digital nomad.
Don't say it again!
I had no fixed abode, but I did have a laptop, and so wherever I could find Wi-Fi was my home.
Oh, wow. Okay, then this is when? This is 2014-15?
Yeah.
Or earlier than that?
Yeah, 2014-2015. Okay. And by the time I came back, I was lean as a fish, I was tan as the bark on a tree. And the Nutribullet, when I was staying with my parents, was just a way to, like, just keep up this health that I had cultivated. So, I think I accidentally ordered two.
Yes, you did order two, which is quite expensive. They're 130 quid each.
Yes, and so two came, and I was like, why do I have two? So kept one back, and then my parents had one.
Right, okay.
And from then on, nobody in our family has gone to the toilet without singing a song inspired by the Nutribullet.
Go on.
I'm now going to talk about poop.
Excellent. This is that point in the show. Lovely.
It's that point
Pleased
in
we've got
the
there.
Show. I'm yeah. sorry. When you are consuming that much fruit and veg mm-hmm. that you can get in a Nutribullet, it does things.
Well, maybe you should take. Maybe that's why the book got written so efficiently, because you were tapping away whilst you were on the crapper.
Yeah, gotta go.
Tap and crap.
So then it became, you know, the song "Bulletproof." I'm bulletproof. So because it's a Nutribullet,
poo.
Yeah, a bullet poo, and so you know, I'll ricochet, I'll take my aim, fire away, and so that became the whole shebang for that season. That's in my life.
Beautiful. Was it like being back in Cambodia? You. turned yourself inside out, but you spent £130 for the privilege.
To do it, yeah. I became obsessed with what you could do with a NutriBullet. Your soups. You could make your soups. You could make... I used to make little energy balls where I'd get...
Oh, I love an energy ball. I love an energy ball.
Yeah, dates.
Doughy sort of... Oh, yes, please.
Yeah. Nice. Nightmare to clean from a NutriBullet, though. You probably shouldn't be doing that with a NutriBullet, but yes.
Well, it's all right if you got two, because you just throw one away, don't you? That's basically... you've got disposable NutriBullets. Things are going very well for Laura Jo Williams.
We like to listen to Toast, and we're not the kind who would boast, and even in spite of the host, we still like to listen to Toast. La la la.
Let's romp into 2016 now. When did you sell your book? When did that moment happen? When did you have the moment?
When I was staying with my parents, when my mum had the knee, so in the bulletproof phase at the end of 2015.
How amazing was that moment?
It was just it was weird, and I ended up getting depression because of it. Because dream aftercare is shit. So I had realised this dream that had kept me going for so long.
Here you go, you see? This is the thing. You've got the thing, and you were thinking about the thing rather than the process of getting
exactly.
the thing.
Exactly. I lost sight of my core desired feelings. This is it. So I just ended up feeling really sort of sad and spent.
Yes, anticlimactic, of course.
It was. And then I had to step away from writing... For the whole summer of 2016, just stepped away from writing after the book came out and said, I can't do it. Like, there's nothing in me. This is a horrible feeling.
There's nothing in me because she's had too many NutriBullets.
She's had too many NutriBullets and she's become a published author.
Dream aftercare. Where's the self-help book on dream aftercare? It almost certainly exists, actually. Let's not go.
And if it doesn't, then it must.
Yeah, it must. Let's go into 2017. When did you start to turn around from the sort of post-dream depression thing?
Over the summer of 2016. Mm-hmm. And interestingly... So I stopped writing. I became a children's nanny to pay the rent for 30 hours a week. And that was what I did. And in the meantime, dated wildly.
Wow. Where? Down in London or up in Derbyshire?
This is in London. And was swimming in Stoke Newington Leisure Centre's pool and thought, I'm dating like it's my job. I'm going to see if I can make it my job. So wrote a pitch and sent it to Grazia because one of the editors there had emailed me to said she'd read my book and loved it. So I had an in.
Yeah.
And sent this pitch and then got a meeting with the editor of Grazia at the Covent Garden Hotel, sat at a table next to Patrick Dempsey, who was in town to promote Bridget Jones's Baby.
What?
Very small man.
Okay, maybe a baby. Man. Maybe that's why it was Bridget Jones's Baby, because he's actually a baby.
Actually
maybe not.
Baby.
Yeah. Right. Good. So.
And got commissioned for a 4-month dating column in Grazia.
That's just. That is the best thing to come from Stoke Newington swimming pool, apart from possibly shingles. That is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And Natasha Perlman was the editor at the time, and she said it was the best pitch she'd ever seen.
Why? What was your pitch? What did you say? I'm just going to date for Britain.
It was very good.
What did you do? How does one pitch for a dating column? My God, the things we're learning on this podcast today.
The things we're learning. Do you know what? Actually, and this was a very humbling time. My first book was a memoir about getting dumped by my high school sweetheart, and he went on to marry my friend, and it made me very sad, and I became very promiscuous before declaring a year-long vow of celibacy, and I spent the summer in an Italian convent. And this is all what's covered in the book.
Hang on. You went to an Italian convent for a summer?
Yes, so when I was busy sending my brother a book about Zen Buddhism in music, I had sent it from the convent. That's why I wasn't with him.
So, How were your parents when, you know, their son was in Chicago being an editor and their daughter was a nun? They must have felt like, yeah, we've smashed this.
I just give my parents endless credit for not trying to save us from ourselves.
No, absolutely not. They're genuine. I mean it. They must have smashed it because you want your kids to do weird shit, let's be honest.
Yeah. And do you know what? And now I think that's why we are pals, because I am my fullest self with them. And I've got many a friend who is a version of themselves with their family, but it's not their truest self. And my parents have made it so I can be more myself with them than anybody else in the world. And they're not my best friends. I think it's weird to position parent-children dynamics as like being best buds. They're my parents. But I just think they're the tits.
Yeah. Well, sounds like they are.
So
God, there's so much to unpack. Right. So tell us about the pitch.
So in this pitch, because this book had come out that talked about being heartbroken, being a bit promiscuous, being celibate, the bulk of the book was about being celibate. That is not the bit that the Sun, the Mirror, the Daily Mail picked up on that then went viral around the world. The bit that went viral around the world was basically that I'd been a bit of a slag. And at the time, I don't have a Google alert on my name anymore, but at the time I did. And I was getting alerts every day in Hindi, in Italian, in Flemish. My God. It was bonkers. I had several radio interviews with the BBC, and all of the male DJs basically said, gosh, are you not embarrassed that, you know, you'll never get a boyfriend again because you're a bit used up now?
Oh, like, it was my God.
Mortifying. And it's just the tiniest little bit of the book where I had, you know, a mad however many months. And so I basically put in this pitch. I was like, look, when I talk about sex, it literally goes worldwide. So I should write about sex and dating in Grazia. And they were like, yep.
Cheers
okay.
then. Thanks for coming.
So I leveraged something that was really humiliating and really embarrassing, to the point where I would be going out on these dates and just not telling these men what my surname was, because I didn't want them to Google me and see that the top result was the Daily Mail, you know, calling me names that you shouldn't be calling anybody. You know, Russell Brand had exactly the same behavior as me, and he won Shagger of the Year. So, you know, there was still a, this was pre-Me Too.
It's almost like women are treated differently to men sometimes. Do you know what I mean? It's weird.
Bizarre. I'm starting to think that's the case.
All right. Okay. Let's move on. Look, come on. We're running out of time. We're running out of time. You've done too much stuff.
Conversation GPSing. We're on the scenic route.
No, but I love
it. We've seen the beach and now we're on our way home.
Well, look, come on. We've got to get back. We've got to wrap this up soon. So what I'm going to do, Laura, I'm going to come charging into present day. That's all right with you. Okay. So we're going to go into lockdown, right? We're going to see how you have been coping with lockdown. Lots of reading. I mean, that's something which we can see throughout your Amazon purchase history. Where the Crawdads Sing. I'm reading that at the moment.
Are you? It's on my TBR pile.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's all right. I've read better, but that's slightly, you know, reducing the whole thing. But yeah, it'd be interesting to hear what you think. What else have we got here? May. Oh, we've got a tape measure. Yes, please. $2.99. Come on. Got to be a story there. Mm-hmm. What are you measuring? Come on, skip to the end.
My boobs. It got to the point where I've got one bra and I would wear this bra and be like, this hurts. This is too small. And I spent some money on some new dresses, and I thought, there's no good, you know, it's no good investing in some new dresses and then screwing up the silhouette by wearing crap underwear that doesn't fit. So in lieu of being able to get an appointment in the Marks and Spencer's changing room, I had to do it myself and then input the stuff on an app in my phone. And
wow, the things, the ways that people have suffered because of lockdown. You've had to measure your own tits.
Yes. I did, and now I was right. I was wearing a bra that was too small.
Oh.
And it's phenomenal. You know, you're taught when you're young, oh, you know, Jordan has got 32 DD boobs or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that's the biggest of the biggest. Women have been lied to about what big boobs look like.
Mm.
Because you wouldn't pass me in the street and think, crikey, I bet she's got backache. But these bras that came through through the post after I had measured, honestly, they could fit on my head. And that's what it is to wear a bra that fits. And I'll be on a Zoom call and I'll be going, hey, have you measured your tits lately? Because I've just done mine. And I tell you what, I'm about 20 sizes bigger than I thought I was.
But hang on, do they change size? How much do tits change size? And also, isn't what do you often get ones bigger than t'other?
Yes, that can be a thing. That can be, you are correct. But yes, as you know, I'm no stranger to the quarantine 15. I'm not ashamed to say it. So as your back gets wider, and I think cup size is determined on the difference between the fullness of the boob and then the bit under the boob.
Mm.
And so as your size changes, your size fluctuates. It can be, you know, the actual the bit that goes around the whole of the body that changes. And when that changes, it can affect what cup size you need. I've had a boob education.
Yeah.
This lockdown. I really have.
And thanks for sharing some of those that information with us. So what you're saying is to anyone listening, well, I mean, ladies, really, measure your baps.
Measure your baps. Don't be uncomfortable.
Don't be uncomfortable, especially if you're doing things like going running. I mean, you said earlier on that you started to go running, and there's nothing worse than sports bras. I've seen some of the tit corsets that Mrs. Price has to put on, and it's completely unfair. They've got to be measured up properly.
They've got to be measured up properly. And coming into, yes, we're in lockdown and wearing masks and whatever, one of my favourite tweets has been, basically, if I can lock up my bajangas for 10 hours a day in a bra, you can wear a mask to go into Tesco, my friend.
My neighbor,
in the last few months during lockdown, you went very domestic in May when you bought the Viva Express Park and Go ironing board, really trying to make ironing sound like an exciting shampoo. Park and Go. Do you know what I mean? It's a fucking ironing board. Stop and Stuck is what it should be called.
I love ironing.
Do you?
It's my one thing. And I'll tell you for why. So I bought the iron and the ironing board because I'd invested in these new dresses.
That look
great with my new undergarments. If you wear the proper underwear, Susie and Trini and Susanna taught us this time immemorial ago, you know. If you wear the proper underwear, your dresses look good, but they also need to be ironed. And I'd just been using a handheld steamer for a long time, and it just was not cutting the mustard. So now I stand in the spare bedroom, and there's something about the process of, like, I mean, it can take 1 to 2 business working weeks to go from the laundry basket to the washing machine to upstairs to get an ironed. It's a long process.
It's not on Amazon Prime, is it, this stuff? This isn't next day delivery.
I am not efficient. I'm more of a, it's coming via airmail from Paris sort of a laundrette. But, yeah, just to stand and do it, and I get a lot of joy from it, and then hanging up all my clothes and knowing I've got this full wardrobe
Zen Buddhism, isn't it? That's what it is.
It's my new Zen Buddhism. I don't know where I'm going in these new dresses, by the way.
That's the problem, isn't it? You're looking wonderful. And here's the final thing we're going to come to, Laura. We've done tits, and the final thing we should therefore do if we've done tits is 7th of May 2020, teeth. Premium teeth whitening kit with activated charcoal, blue 5-point LED light, 3 gel syringes, including 2 mouth trays. Now you're thinking, wow, these things work. They look amazing. I've seen the adverts. And then you see it's $19.99 and you think, this ain't gonna work.
It gave me something to do, though. It filled it out.
So was it completely crap?
Do you know what? If you gave me 10 grand in my hand now, I would go and get my teeth done. I'd go proper Love Island veneers.
Really?
Yeah, but it, from a nice Harley Street doctor, so I don't look totally ridiculous. Right. I would get my teeth done. I think there's a lot to be said. If you can have shiny hair, clear skin, and white teeth, you're halfway to looking decent. Mm. And my editor has got phenomenally white teeth, and she got her stuff in America. But I read the reviews, and it is a bit 50-50. It can go one way or the other. And I thought, I know which way it would go for me. I don't trust it. Let's go for something a little less intense.
Yeah. Actually, talking of intensity, I've just spotted the final thing. I mean, and this is on the way. This is yet to be delivered.
Oh, God. Is it coming today?
This is still coming. Advanced, this was ordered on the 26th of April, the beginning of lockdown. And when I say it's still coming, it's probably an appropriate turn of phrase. Advanced design toys for male, female stimulators for her. Delay tools for man. Silicone. It says vibrati. What's the vibrati? It stimulates the anus, stimulates the G point, stimulates the clitoris. It looks like... to try and describe it to you, it looks like a joystick which has got a joystick crossed with the main character from A Bug's Life, if that makes any sense. There's all sorts going on here.
It's not been delivered, so I couldn't possibly pass comment. And I'm not going to lie. I thought I had archived anything that was too incriminating.
Archive this. Currently unavailable. It says here, we use secret packaging to protect your privacy.
Excellent.
Hasn't really worked, has it, for my mate bought a toaster. It's got a button. Comes with a button you can pinch, and then there's more photos. USB quick charge, so that's good.
Look, sex is natural. We all do it.
Listen, we all do it. Come on, we've done. And also, you are not the first to have this on the episode. You're the first. I've never seen this one, so it's kind of like a.
Okay.
Oh, I see. So it's a thing you can good. You can pop it on. He can pop it on himself, and then it adds. Right. Okay. So he's basically making himself Robocock when he adds this. That's basically what happens. There. So. Well, I'm glad that this episode's had a happy finish. That's the important thing. I have loved talking to you, Laura Jane Williams. You've been absolutely magnificent. Thank you so much for sharing quite literally everything on the podcast. Now, your book, let's talk about that, shall we? The new book from Laura Jane Williams. It's out at the beginning of August, which is not
August
far
6th.
Off now. August the 6th. It's called The Love Square. Do you want to tell us about The Love Square?
The Love Square is about historically unlucky in love, Penny Bridge, has a new change of circumstance that means suddenly she is presented with a new love interest, and then another.
I see.
So when she has to choose from three men, could any of them end up being the one?
Nice. I love you've got that pitch down pat, haven't you? That was perfect.
I mean, I've only got a second to sell this, you know what, I just write now that I've moved into fiction. I had a book last year called Our Stop. This year it's The Love Square. I've got another one coming out next year. I write happy escapist fiction that should be enjoyed by a swimming pool on holiday.
Perfect.
But in lieu of us, a lot of us doing that this year, make an Aperol spritz.
Yeah.
Put some sea sounds on YouTube and just escape with a slightly sexy, silly rom-com of a story. Why not?
I like that you went slightly sexy and then did a little bit of indigesting.
Did you?
Well, yeah, we got that. We got all of that.
It's sexy.
Added to it.
It's, lovely. Just a little bit of acid reflux. Pardon moi.
Probably because of the last item that I discovered on your Amazon. Right, The Love Square. Laura Jane Williams is out at the beginning of August. Fantastic book. Check it out. And of course, there's other books available as well. How many novels have you done?
I've done three non-fiction. This is my second fiction, which is where I will be spending my time forevermore.
Indeed. I think anyone who's listened to this will be desperate to climb into your head. It's absolutely brilliant. Laura Jane Williams,
thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster. Have a lovely day now.
Thank you.
Bye.
I'm thinking of you when I'm without you. I think about you, please don't leave me.
The brilliant Laura Jane Williams on My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, how wicked was she? I absolutely loved her. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll let you go and get on with your lives now. I'll be back next week with more My Mate Bought a Toaster. In the meantime, if you want to, you know how this bit works. Rate and review would be lovely. I love all the reviews. They're really nice and they really help. And if you want to give us a tweet at ToasterPod, and we're at ToasterPod on Instagram as well, give me a follow. You know all the business. Or just get on with your lives and have a good day. Thanks, bye.
GreatBigOwl.com. Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get wrung dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.